Star Walker Studios presents Star Citizens United, a podcast dedicated to making the most of the future hit PC video game, Star Citizen. Greetings, citizen, and welcome to the Star Citizens United podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I'll discuss Gold Horizon and Sakura Sun. Hello, citizen. Welcome to episode 28 of Star Citizens United. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. I am very excited to be podcasting tonight. Hope that you're having a good one. Thank you so much for flying with me today. So I am going to continue my, 28 episode long tradition of doing lore episodes. So today I'm going to talk about a couple corporations in the Star Citizen galaxy, Gold Horizon and Sakura Sun. So today's even more of a special episode for me, at least, because I am enjoying a nice, tasty beer while I am drinking this podcast. While I'm recording this podcast, I swear I just started it. It should not be kicking in yet. It's kind of funny because when I first started podcasting, I was working a full-time job podcasting on the evenings and weekends, just whenever I had time. So a lot of times I was podcasting either late at night or on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon or evening. So a lot of times, or pretty much all the time, I would be drinking a beer while I was doing my podcast. In fact, the first podcast I did with my wife, Nikki, was called Through the Rift. It was a podcast about the Rift MMORPG. And we actually had a segment at the beginning of that show where we would talk about whatever beers we were drinking, because we were always drinking a beer when we were doing the show. And we thought it would be kind of a fun thing to talk about. So much so that we eventually did a podcast just about beer called Beer Tasters. And for any of you who are fans of that show will come back. I'm in the process right now of moving across the country back to Seattle. And once we get all settled in and get our new place and everything, get the new studio set up, I'm thinking I'm wanting to do some more Beer Tasters episodes. I'll have to talk Nikki into it. So not too long ago, I decided to have a go at doing podcasting full time. I was in between jobs and thought, hey, this is a great time to go for it. So since then, I've been, I pretty much podcast every day, at least during the week, but I record usually during the day now, and I do all my editing during the day, kind of the 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 kind of thing. So I don't drink beer when I podcast anymore, because I'm not going to drink a beer, you know, first thing in the morning, although maybe I should. I don't know. So with the move, I've been doing just crazy mad recording of podcasts in the last few weeks. And if my voice sounds a little strained, that's why. I've been doing most days multiple episodes, trying to get a lot of episodes in the can so that there's no breakdown in content for you guys as I'm making my move. And unfortunately for this show, I did take a little bit of a break between season 2 and season 3, which I didn't want to do. But I ended up having to do that. But I'm actually recording this right before I actually make my move. This might be either the last or second to the last podcast episode I record in this studio before I have to pack it up. So I'm recording this at night. And so I get to have a beer, which will hopefully help my voice get through another episode today without crapping out on us. So anyway, wow, that was totally unrelated to Star Citizen. Although I love to play Star Citizen when I'm having a beer. It's a great way to enjoy both at the same time. Why not? So today I am going to start out talking about Gold Horizon. And we have at the very beginning of this article, which, by the way, is from the Robert Space Industries website, and I will have a link directly to this article in my show notes for episode 28 at starwalkerstudios.com/StarCitizensUnited, which reminds me, I've just started using a new URL convention for my episodes. I'm not going to go back and change the old episodes because there's links to them in various places. I don't want to break those links. But from now on, if you're the type of person that actually types URLs in, I am, but I think we're rare these days. But if you're that kind of person and you want to find, from here on out anyway, if you want to find an episode directly, it's just going to be starwalkerstudios.com/StarCitizensUnited/whatever the episode number is. So this episode will be starwalkerstudios.com/StarCitizensUnited/28. And I'm doing this with all my shows now. So starwalkerstudios.com is my main website, and then it'll be slash the show name and then slash the episode number. And I don't know why I never did this to begin with. It's actually not that hard to do on my website. It just never occurred to me to do that. And mainly because I don't think many people type in URLs anymore. I think most people click links, or they'll Google the site, or they'll, you know, they might put in Star Walker Studios or even starwalkerstudios.com and get to the root site and then kind of go from there. I don't think a lot of people these days type in URLs. But I do. So if you're like me, if you're a total nerd that will type in a URL, that's how you can get directly to this episode, slash 28. But anyway, if you go to any of the episodes for Star Citizens United, you will see links to the Galactic Guides or whatever articles I'm using for the information for this show. So I will have a link directly to the Gold Horizon Galactic Guide in episode 28's show notes at starwalkerstudios.com if you want to follow along or you want to go back later and check something out. So at the beginning of this, we have a quote from Ivor Messer, the infamous. That's what I call him, the infamous, from 2546. This is from a speech on his ascendancy to Imperator. Together, we will improve and expand mankind ever outwards towards the endless gold horizon. So, Gold Horizon, that's the name of the company we're talking about tonight. Gold Horizon, formerly the Gold Horizon Extrasolar Mineral Prospecting Corporation, there's a mouthful for you, remains a strong reminder of both unchecked greed and our civilization's thriving expansion into the galaxy. The company, named after a line from Messer's ascendancy speech, which I just read to you, in some ways represents the best and worst of the era. It seems ironic to today's historians that the same Messer government that inspired Gold Horizon's growth also brought about its end, and that those who ran the company were victims of the same brutality that affected the entire empire. Gold Horizon was founded as a dedicated prospecting corporation in the middle of the 26th century, intending to take advantage of the new government's series of tax breaks for asteroid mining concerns. The company found immediate success, buoyed by the discovery of the Grakneth Lode, a high concentration of titanium-bearing asteroids in the outlands of the Terra system. Gold Horizon's mineral profits quickly led to its establishment as an industrial concern, producing prefabricated mining stations for quick deployment in newly surveyed star systems. At this time in history, interstellar claim jumpers had become ubiquitous, taking advantage of the long lead time between corporate surveys and the actual start of large-scale mining. With Gold Horizon's prefabs, an entire mining operation complete with drilling rigs, storage, and spatial defense perimeters could be carried along with survey ships and deployed immediately. The project was another massive success for the company. By Gold Horizon's second decade of operation, the United Empire of Earth had become an established reality, and human civilization had caught the terraforming bug. Observing that vast amounts of the imperial economy were now devoted to supporting general expansion and terraforming projects, Gold Horizon opted to move from mining support into planetary transformation support. The result of this shift is the Gold Horizon Space Station, the distinctive ring-shaped platform deployed around the galaxy to house terraforming workers, their equipment, and their support systems. Unlike Gold Horizon's mining equipment, the Gold Horizon Station series was massive, with the ability to support hundreds of workers in their difficult task. These Starside base camps purported to offer all the comforts of home, from semi-comfortable living quarters to fully equipped medical bays to dedicated entertainment arenas. As large-scale standardized terraforming equipment began to come into existence, it was designed to transit seamlessly through the Gold Horizon station systems that supported the first wave of spit-and-glue biosphere conversions. With two fingers directly on the pulse of the expanding empire and a growing number of politicians in their pocket, Gold Horizon seemed to be an unstoppable juggernaut. The company took in billions from government and private contracts, many rumored to have been acquired through bribes. Gold Horizon had its name directly attached to the reigning social movement and seemed as if it could do no wrong. That was until 2650, when CEO and majority shareholder Dennis Acevedo made a single fateful decision: move the corporation's headquarters to Terra. Historians remain divided on the reasoning for Acevedo's decision. Terra was an increasingly popular center of human culture, but many in Corson Messer V's circle of advisors feared that its popularity was also shifting the cultural focus away from Earth. Whether the company was seeking to reduce its overhead with the relocation, or it was actively protesting the increasingly martial focus of the Empire's expansion, is lost to history. Whatever the reasoning, the Imperator took note and proclaimed Gold Horizon's move to be a personal affront. Government contracts completely ceased, and private developers were urged not to continue purchasing Gold Horizon equipment. In the space of just 5 years, Gold Horizon would be driven out of business. In 2654, the Imperator delivered the coup de grace. The government nationalized all terraforming support concerns, that is, Gold Horizon space platforms, ostensibly in the name of protecting the citizen settlers who would rely on them while laying claim to the new worlds. Gold Horizon found a significant portion of their assets frozen and the sum total of their long-term business plan completely untenable. Two CEOs, serving in rapid succession, attempted to right the ship with a move back to mining and then general heavy industry support, but nothing could stop the inevitable. Gold Horizon closed shop permanently in 2655. In one light, the lasting impact of Gold Horizon is the simple fact that in 2944, trillions of humans live on worlds that were uninhabitable centuries before. Even if mankind was destined to expand to the stars regardless, Gold Horizon's support backbone was still partly responsible for keeping human worlds closer to one another than would have otherwise been possible. From that, it is not unreasonable to say that the geographic strength of the empire today owes something to what the corporation enabled. Still, Gold Horizon's distinctive G in a Bell logo remains a divisive symbol in today's society. As it has long since entered the public domain, it occasionally reappears as an avant-garde fashion accessory. In the more conservative areas of old Earth, Gold Horizon purses and messenger bags remain big sellers. History aside, a lasting impact of Gold Horizon comes from the general indestructibility of their stations. Dozens of surviving Gold Horizon stations remain scattered throughout the empire, mostly in areas of space where terraforming began but was deemed unprofitable midway through the process. The stations have become warrens for illegal activities. Inhabited by loners, survivalists, corsairs, and worse, surviving Gold Horizon stations in distant systems can range from black market bonanzas to deadly battlegrounds fought over constantly by competing pirate shock troops. In 2943, the United Empire of Earth Senate conducted an undercover investigation of the Gold Horizon bases and ultimately determined that it would not be possible to relocate civilians based aboard them. The formal recommendation was that the military pursue a campaign to destroy the remaining bases from space. although these plans have fallen by the wayside in the light of legal issues and the increased Fonduul threat. Well, there you go. There's a bit of a history lesson on Gold Horizon. So now on a bit of a lighter note, we'll talk about Sakura Sun. Again, I will have a link to this article in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. Soft drinks, high-end kitchen equipment, children's toys, Sakura Sun, rover platforms, terraforming solutions, bioengineered livestock, Sakura Sun, high-tech wave cannons, starship power plants, antimatter ordnance, Sakura Sun. While corporate conglomerates are not uncommon, it's rare for any company to advertise them all under the same banner. But at Sakura Sun, empire building is in full effect. You'll find a little bit of everything branded with a distinctive purple sun and cherry blossom logo, from plastic hi-ho flat cat figurines to top-of-the-line multi-particle wave cannons. Stranger still, Sakura Sun has successfully gained a reputation as a company that not only does a little bit of everything, but does it well. It's kind of like Yamaha these days. I have a Yamaha trumpet and a Yamaha flugelhorn, and they're pretty nice, professional grade instruments. Sakura Sun's excessive branding is only the first step in a carefully cultivated corporate image, ostensibly designed to mimic the Japanese megacorporations of bygone centuries, like Yamaha. The outrageously colorful logo artwork, the unified outward product design, and the public talk about a corporate culture of hard work and executive respect is always present at Sakura Sun's corporate headquarters in Tokyo, Earth, Seoul. Sakura Sun's corporate headquarters is a modest 70-story skyscraper. Each floor houses a distinct product group that functions independently from those above and below it. The modular design allows product groups to be transformed or eliminated quickly. However, when the building was first set up, the company spared no expense in having top artists paint murals reflecting each current product line, leading to no small number of confused visitors who find themselves looking down the gun barrels of the Hornet equipped with a Sakura Sun design turret painted at the entrance to what is now the Candied Fruits distribution office. While the history behind Sakura Sun's distinctive frozen dinners or their beloved line of children's characters would fill a book, the specific portions of their extensive lineup that most appeal to spacecraft owners are the two dedicated to private StarCraft modules. The crowning glory of Sakura Sun's spacecraft weapons division is the proprietary multi-particle wave cannon. Ostensibly the brainchild of Sakura Sun Space Sciences Division, the MPWC is an example of carefully researched xenotech. In 2922, following the lead of MISS groundbreaking interspecies trade deal, Sakura Sun made a billion credit buyout of a burgeoning Xi'an research lab that granted them technology trading rights. For a decade and a half, company scientists painstakingly worked alongside Xi'an researchers to develop alien tech compatible with human systems. The research effort took a team of thousands, and the overall cost approached a trillion credits. But at the end of the process, Sakura Sun had developed an incredibly effective weapon type that could not be produced, legally or technically, by other human companies: the multi-particle wave cannon. The MPWC is a fascinating piece of technology. In effect, the gun is a series of multiple miniaturized particle accelerators that fire sequentially. This results in a stream of bosons projected towards a target. The bosons occupy the same quantum state as a wave while in flight and then collapse into discrete particles with unique states upon impact. The result is massive damage to both shields and standard armor types. What's more, the weapon is fast. The multi-particle wave cannon is the only energy gun capable of attaining the fire rate of a Gatling gun. Sakura Sun was quick to bring the results of their research to the market, opting to pursue the civilian populace instead of licensing the technology to the military. An extensive lineup of 25 guns was put into production. The MPWC line has five distinct types, which define overall size. in order, they are the Breeze Fire, size 1, Wind Fire, size 2, Storm Fire, size 3, Gale Fire, size 4, and the enormous Torrent Fire, size 5. Each MPWC size has 5 production models that range in quality and price from basic to extreme luxury class. EX, DX, X, and XT are the standard range, plus a fifth model that is produced in extremely limited numbers and given a 2X01 numerical designation. For example, Breeze Fire 2101, Wind Fire 2201, etc. These are extremely prized, and even older models sell for a significant amount on the secondary market. If there were one downside to the MPWC technology, it's that it is so advanced. Even though Sakura Sun produces a sturdy product, if it were to malfunction, self-repair is impossible in many cases. Some have speculated that this is why the weapon was not offered to the military, which typically needs a durable and easily field-repaired gun. In addition to their headline-grabbing and profit-securing gun lineup, Sakura Sun has recently added a new line of extremely respected power plants, with the initial Light Blossom systems being offered for the 2943 financial year. It seems that by focusing on more than just offensive devices, Sakura Sun hoped that their sales could flourish in or out of conflict. The Light Blossom is a helium-6 sonoluminescent bubble power plant optimized for civilian use with an emphasis on low-emission stealth roles. Designed to compete with Lightning Power's Powerbolt, the press release for the first units described the reactor as a shadow in space. It goes on to say that the design intent was to create a high-output generator that would still work to limit your energy signature. 9 Light Blossom models are currently in production in 3 sizes. The range runs from the low-cost size 3 Light Blossom 6HE7A to the top-of-the-line 6HE9X. It is known that Sakura Sun's engineers are focusing on an even more efficient Helium-7 system, and that they are likely to reveal this technology in the near future. Helium-7 would theoretically allow an even greater output to signature block ratio. So there you go, a pretty amusing article there on Sakura Sun. Definitely had some fun with that one. I wonder, I'm sure that there are some Sakura Sun fanatics out there. People love their brand loyalty, right? Maybe Sakura Sun is the Apple of the future. I could just see some Yahoo in his spaceship with Sakura Sun weapons, Sakura Sun power plant, drinking his Sakura Sun soda, etc., etc., etc. Well, that is going to wrap up episode 28 of Star Citizens United. Thank you so much for flying with me today. If you'd like to reach me, you can email me at scupodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on Google+. Just search for Lex Starwalker, and you can find me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit my website, starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find the show notes for this episode. You can also find my other podcasts there. And once again, I want to remind you that you can also find Star Citizens United on the base. So you can check that out at radio.starcitizenbase.com. I don't need to tell you what the base is, right? You already know. I'm sure you do. Everybody knows what the base is. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. Pretty sweet. Lots of great music, lots of great Star Citizen content. And that's just one of the many things that makes this game so fucking awesome. I mean, we're still in alpha and we have our own radio station. Well, quote unquote radio station. It's not really radio, but we'll call it radio. Radio of the future. It's going to be what we call it in the future. Who cares? Semantics, right? So yeah, check out the base. Check out my show on the base. Currently, I am on Wednesdays at 7:30, but that could change anytime. So just go check out their schedule. They have a schedule there with the programming on there, and find my show. That'd be sweet. And also, if you enjoy the show and you use something like iTunes or Stitcher, please head on over there and give me a review. I would really appreciate it. I have buttons for iTunes and Stitcher at the top of the show notes of every episode. And you can just click on that button. It will take you directly to the show in iTunes or on Stitcher. And you can just leave a review. It doesn't have to be long, a sentence, a few words. I really appreciate it. So once again, I want to thank you so much for flying with me today on another episode of Star Citizens United. Until next time, I will see you out there.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. Please see all that Starwalker Studios has to offer at starwalkerstudios.com.